You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
This is hour two on this Thursday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We got some more cancellations with college football. We'll dive into that topic coming up here in a little bit. Phone calls are always welcome. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle @DPShow. We have a little bit of sunshine in Augusta. There's a rain delay. And it looks like the golfers on the range, not everybody's going to get their round in today. Now, you do have the two-hour rain delay, but also factor in the loss of daylight savings, and you're probably going to have to finish your round by 5 o'clock East Coast time, and there will be a significant number of players who will not finish their rounds today. I think the weather, as we progress into the weekend, supposed to be significantly better, but there are going to be some players who have to show up early tomorrow morning to finish their first round and then get started on their second round. Football tonight, it's the Colts and the Titans. Ohio State and Maryland has been canceled. 4 SEC games postponed. Difference between Ohio State and Maryland, that's canceled, will not be made up. The SEC games postponed, and hopefully they will be able to make those up. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, Twitter handle @DPShow. Say good morning to Peacock. This has been great. Thank you for all of you who have gone and downloaded the Peacock app and watched the show for free all 3 hours, and Fox Sports Radio lineup, all of our great affiliates around the world, numbering almost 370. Gang's all here, ready to go. McLovin, poll question, did we change it up for hour two?
Yeah, the first hour was whose future would you want, Patriots or Jets? Over 80% went Patriots. Let's go, which quarterback would you want to build around, Lamar Jackson or Kyler Murray? A lot of people are diving into this topic. It's all over Twitter today, even before this. I'm not sure. I think Lamar Jackson's quote yesterday sort of said to people, uh-oh, the Ravens aren't going the right direction. But they're still winning a lot of games.
Yeah, they're still good. But I think we're looking at the individual play. You also factor in the postseason with what happened to Lamar Jackson last year. But imagine you were the unanimous MVP the previous year, and people are already looking for somebody else as we move forward here. Or they're willing to invest in Kyler Murray more than Lamar Jackson. We've seen enough of both where you've got this figured out of what they're going to be like for the next 5 years. And I do love that time frame. If I give you any quarterback for the next 5 years, what quarterback are you taking? Joe Burrow? Patrick Mahomes? Seems obvious. If I take Mahomes out of the equation, Justin Herbert? Next 5 years, who do you have? Kyler Murray's right there because he's doing it with he's going to maybe rush for 1,000 and throw for over 3,000. That's never happened before. Maybe get his team into the playoffs. Yeah, McLovin.
Trevor Lawrence, with the caveat, you get to build for 4 years with the salary cap. So that's part of it, too. Kyler's still cheap. Lamar still hasn't gotten paid.
But it makes me nervous, or though. Maybe. Joe Burrow with the Bengals makes me nervous with Trevor Lawrence with the Jets. It's not just the quarterback. It's who's with you. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury may not have been a great head coach in college, but he is a great offensive-minded head coach in the NFL. And that partnership with Kyler Murray is really paying off. You know, it feels like that he knew who he wanted. He created the offense specifically for him, the same thing that Carolina did with Cam Newton. And more coaches and more offensive coordinators are doing this. What kind of offense can we run to make you better? It used to be you'd bring in somebody and say, okay, this is our offense. And I think we've done a disservice to some quarterbacks down through the years where you should have been throwing more or allowing a quarterback to run more. And we were kind of stuck in the, you know, the dark ages with our offenses. And then all of a sudden, we started to see more teams, more coaches, more offensive coordinators buy into what college is doing. College doesn't borrow from the NFL. It's the other way around. All right, so we have our poll question, McLovin.
Yeah, I'll just make a quick argument for the Ravens.
Okay.
I think the Ravens would be heavily favored against the Cardinals head-to-head. And because they play a conservative style. Lamar doesn't have a spread-out field like Kyler Murray.
But this isn't about the team. This is about the quarterback.
Right. I think if you put Lamar in Arizona, he would put up, we'd have better numbers this year. I think like Kyler's benefiting from everything going on there in Arizona.
Well, yeah. If you said you want Kyler Murray and I take Lamar Jackson, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Like I think it's 1 and 1A. There's not a big drop-off there.
And Kyler would be really good in Baltimore, too, probably.
Yes. Kyler Murray's going to be good no matter where he is because he has the ability. He can be Russell Wilson, but more electric. He can make you pay more because his legs, he's one of the faster players in the game. Russ keeps a play alive. He's very smart. He slides. Kyler can beat you with a 40-yard run. Russ doesn't do that. Yeah, Paul.
You're right, but Kyler Murray, he's a genius about not getting hit. He takes the angles. He'll slide way early. Like he could have a 50-yard run and he'll like 25's fine. He out of bounds. It's really genius by him to stay upright.
Well, I think I don't want to give him too much credit for avoiding getting hit by somebody who weighs 100 pounds more than him. There are a lot of these quarterbacks who get caught up in, I got to get the extra yard. I got to show how tough I am. And remember when Jim Brown, the great Jim Brown, criticized Franco Harris? Franco Harris would run out of bounds. And we thought, you're no running back. You got to, you know, punish those defensive players. And Franco was ahead of his time. Franco was like, I don't know. Maybe I avoid a hit and I get out of bounds. I might not get one more yard, but I get out of bounds. Yes, McLovin.
You're making it uncomfortable over here. Paulie is stewing because you didn't mention 34 for the Bears.
Yeah, but Walter Payton didn't go out of bounds.
He still hasn't.
I know.
Never. Occasionally he's pushed out of bounds and I think there's a flag.
Isaiah Thomas has done it again. Thank you, Isaiah. He was on Shay Shay, that's Shannon Sharpe's podcast, and I don't know what Isaiah's doing, but here is Shannon Sharpe talking to Isaiah Thomas about the five toughest players he faced when he was playing.
Who would you say are the five toughest players that you've had to face?
Again, you know, and you can just go by the winning records, right? You know,
right.
Magic, Kareem, Bird, Dr. J, and then I would say Jordan.
Okay, you got my attention there. And then Shannon Sharpe's following up about, you know, Jordan not being in his, you know, the top five.
You know, just head-to-head, you know, I was dominant over him. When all teams met, you know, when you go back and you look at until 91 when I basically had career-ending wrist surgery, up until then, my record against him and his team, it really was a competition there. He just wasn't my competition. Now, Bird.
He didn't have anything that you wanted. He didn't have no trophies.
No. And like I said, my focus was Bird, Magic, Dr. J, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Those were the guys.
And that's fair. Like, that part of it is fair because at the time, that's a young Jordan and a Bulls team that wasn't very good, and Isaiah was playing for a very good team with the Bad Boys. That timeline, I'm fine with that. But five toughest players he faced, considering what the Bad Boys did to Michael Jordan. The Jordan rules, when he went to the hoop, you knocked him down. And you're not going to put him in one of the five toughest players you faced? That, to me, it feels like he's sort of trolling Michael Jordan again. And, of course, you know, Michael doesn't mince words, doesn't like Isaiah Thomas, certainly doesn't like him now, didn't like him when they were playing, the whole dream team situation. But let me hear it again, the five toughest players Isaiah Thomas faced.
Who would you say are the five toughest players that you've had to face?
Again, you know, and you can just go by the winning records, right? You know,
right.
Magic, Kareem, Bird, Dr. J, and then I would say Jordan.
Okay, but he puts him fifth, but the toughest players you faced, if you're saying, hey, we were always better than them. Okay, he was better than Jordan's Bulls. He wasn't better than Jordan, but he was better than Jordan's Bulls. I don't know how you can't include Michael Jordan in there higher than that. Toughest player I ever faced. And at least be fair to Jordan and say, look, I don't like him. He doesn't like me. When we played, he didn't like me. I didn't like him. And we beat the hell out of him. But you know what? I got to give him credit. He got up and he eventually ended up winning championships. And you could argue he's the greatest player of all time. Like, that's the answer that should have happened. But I know they hate each other, and maybe, you know, he can't come clean with something like that. Seton?
Why is it so impossible for us, I'll say us, to accept someone ranking another player ahead of Michael Jordan in anything? Like, there's actually no even metric for toughness. There's no way to actually measure it. It's just, it's totally by someone's opinion, right? You can't like point to like look at points or titles or anything like that. But just to have a few players who are all great players over Michael Jordan is like, it's impossible. We can't accept it. There's no, he was the toughest player. You cannot tell me he wasn't.
Oh,
it
no.
It seems so crazy. Like,
but I don't know if he's the toughest that we had to face or individually the toughest that we faced, because there's a difference in that. You know, Bird's teams were better. Dr. J's teams were better. Kareem's teams were better. But as far as toughness, tough to beat you or tough that we beat you up.
But that's why it's like completely subjective. It's like, if that's what Isaiah Thomas says, whether he's trolling Jordan or not, that's what he says, because that's his opinion. That's the game that he played and the life he lived. But when you hear Michael Jordan, there's four tough players in the history. Four? Really?
But if your game plan was to beat up Michael Jordan, I mean, their game plan wasn't beating up Kareem. You know, Bird, they probably were trying to rough up as well, but their game plan was to beat up Michael Jordan. So I have to start with that of just pure toughness. When a book was written about the Jordan rules, about how the Pistons approach Michael Jordan. Look, you want to put Bird up there? They weren't trying to beat up Dr. J.
And actually, that's when Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons were beating up Michael Jordan so much that, remember, then he invented weightlifting?
Invented.
And he brought weightlifting to the NBA. No one had ever lifted weights before until Jordan was like, wait, these guys are going to beat us up. I'm going to start lifting these things to make us stronger. He invented that.
Jordan invented that for the world, not just the NBA.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He brought it,
Yeah, to the world. Yeah. Yes, Paulie.
But if you're waiting for Isaiah Thomas to say what you want normal people to say, don't hold your breath. He's been doing this for 40 years. He loves making people uncomfortable. He likes being difficult. He enjoys it. It's completely calculated by Isaiah, and he will never go the other way.
Yeah.
And I've always been a big fan of his on the court, but he is he can make people uncomfortable.
But sometimes you hurt your credibility. Like, Paul Pierce hurts his credibility as an analyst because he says things that I don't think he really believes. When he talks about LeBron James, he just doesn't like LeBron James. But you know, he kind of cuts his legs out from underneath him as an analyst, because if you start to say these things about LeBron, you sound silly and it sounds so petty, instead of saying, hey, let me give you an honest opinion here. And maybe Isaiah feels that way and he has every right to feel that way. I just don't think you could say that without without at least acknowledging we tried to beat the hell out of Michael Jordan. And he didn't say, you know, hey, you know what we did against Bird? We tried to beat the hell out of him. Or Kareem or Dr. J. Jordan's game plan was they were going to beat the hell out of him. They played 59 games head-to-head all time, including the postseason. The Pistons won 33 times. The Bulls won 26. But given what the Pistons were when Michael was with the Bulls and they weren't very good those first 6 years, they got a pretty good head start. It didn't last. But they did go out of their way to rough him up, which they wrote a book about it. Not tough. I don't need to stick up for Jordan. I just, you know, Isaiah always gives you that smile. Like, he'll say something, he'll go, here's my five. And then he'll go, and then you're going, wait, what? What? Kareem tough? Okay. I don't know. I don't know if anybody cited his toughness. Dr. J, his toughness? I would go, how about his athleticism? Kareem's the greatest scorer of all time. Bird? All right. You tried to beat him up a little bit there. Multiple guys guarding him. Jordan? We went out and tried to, you know, knock him down every single time we played him. That probably would constitute at least being in the top too tough? I don't know. Yeah, Paulie.
I'm looking forward to how long this beef goes on. Is there going to be like the
hopefully
NBA?
Forever.
Forever. It really will, because the NBA is going to have their 100th anniversary team at the Staples Center, and there will be Michael Jordan with a little gut walking out there with a gray beard, and here comes Isaiah. and they put them right next to each other, and they refuse to stand next to each other for the ceremony. And then someone slaps the floor.
And they'll be out there with their walkers. Yeah. I still think you're overrated.
This beef brought to you by Geritol.
I wouldn't have you on the dream team. It's good stuff.
You froze me out.
Yeah.
You froze me out.
I know. It's good. Good. I miss this. I mean, we took it for granted. I don't like when people get along in sports. I like when there's a little friction in there where it really means something. Yeah, see.
Plus, it's just nice to be able to talk about Michael Jordan again. It's been about 3 weeks since we obsessed over some random comment about Michael Jordan.
I think it's all the way back to April, Seton, with the documentary.
Are you kidding me? We just did the whole NBA Finals LeBron legacy versus Jordan. Jordan was in there somewhere, wasn't he?
And today's poll is Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, Michael Jordan. Yeah. Who would you want to quarterback your team?
Tougher to bring down if Jordan had been a quarterback.
Right. Yeah. good poll.
If Jordan had been a quarterback, what quarterback would he be? Yes, McLovin. Your radio's silent on me.
Yeah. I had too much Jordan LeBron in the spring. Okay. I can't do it.
I like how Brett Favre got into the conversation yesterday where basically said that the Eagles and Doug Peterson should have stayed with Nick Foles. And then the Eagles have to respond because it's Brett Favre saying this. And then Carson Wentz has to respond. You know what I'd do if I was Doug Peterson? I'd say, I was a teammate of Brett Favre's. I love Brett. But you know what? What he has to say doesn't matter to me. And by the way, Brett was replaced too. So Brett can say whatever he wants. He's a Hall of Famer. But when it comes to my team and my quarterback, this is who I'm going with. That's all. But now Carson Wentz had to say something. Doug Peterson had to say something. Hey, what do you think of Brett Favre saying that you should have stayed with Nick Foles? Yes, for two.
I think part of it also was it took a third question from the local media for him to finally say Carson's our starting quarterback. Or maybe he could have answered that the first time. It doesn't show a lot of faith in the quarterback. Instead of saying, I respect Brett Favre as a quarterback. And then finally, after the third push, he said what they were looking for him to say, something about Carson Wentz being the starter going forward.
So he should have led with that?
Yeah, it wouldn't have required a second and a third question. Then he's getting annoyed and he's getting impatient. And the Philly media just right there on the first time it was asked, Carson Wentz, our starting quarterback, and Brett's entitled to his opinion.
Let me see if we can get that sound. Yes, McLovin.
I can't. Every time I see a Favre quote, I hear Seton's voice doing Favre. I can't imagine Favre himself saying it. I don't know if you guys are like that. It's just hard for me to take Favre quotes seriously. I don't know why.
I don't know how much film he's breaking down or what he's assessing this on or everything that's included with the injuries and offensive line and all of those things. When did Carson Wentz fall off the cliff? We got to the point where we said, I don't know if he's a franchise quarterback.
As soon as the minute Nick Foles won a Super Bowl for Carson Wentz's team,
yeah, when you handed
pretty much when it was over.
When you handed Carson Nick Foles the MVP trophy, that really dinged his image. He's on the sidelines.
So, that doesn't help your legacy too much.
So I kind of ushered this in when I said, "Nick, you're a Super Bowl champion," and then meanwhile, you got Carson Wentz off to the corner there.
You had a front row seat for it.
Yeah,
that
I did.
Transition.
Yep, and there it was, right in front of me.
Pass the baton.
Yeah, here it is. Pass the Lombardi trophy.
Yep.
Yeah, McLovin.
But doesn't he always do something in a game where Carson's back just for a minute and then eight plays later? Has he fallen off a cliff or is he kind of slowly rolling down?
Feels like he's getting pushed off a cliff by all these analysts. I watch him. I think that he, in his mind or his subconscious, he's always thinking about that knee. Once you have one surgery, then you never stop thinking about it, especially in a position like that. And it just feels like he's not comfortable. Yeah, McLovin.
He'll probably win the division this year, that being said.
That doesn't mean much. Man, he won the division. He was 6-9-1. Man, you proved them wrong. All right, we'll take a break. Where are we headed with all these positive tests, these cancellations, a couple of postponements? Are we going to be able to get all of this in? What if Ohio State has another game that they can't play and it has nothing to do with Ohio State? They're not going to be playing in the Big Ten title game. Could Ohio State still get into the Final Four, the college playoffs, with five games, six games, could they? And can we see a team that maybe like BYU or Texas A&M trying to get into the Final Four, trying to schedule one another or other games so you can fill up your resume the best you can? We'll take a break, 21 after the hour, and we'll talk to Ohio State's head coach, Ryan Day. He'll join us coming up in an hour from now. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Sleep number setting, 100. Quality sleep is more important than ever as we head into winter. And it's not only a natural immunity booster, it also helps with energy and recovery. And I can say this firsthand. When I come in, I'm older than everybody in here. I have more energy than everybody. Yeah, I do, Paulie.
Me, I'm sure. You're 100% right.
Yes.
Even Tyler?
Tyler. Are you kidding? You've been around Tyler? He moves slow. Man, doesn't seem like he gets a good night's sleep. But, you know, there are times I come in, Paulie's at his desk, and he's nodding off, and I have to, like, smack in the back of the head and go, Paul, come on, wake up.
Very helpful.
Yes. But I do it. But I also get a great night's sleep. But there, I got something. Yeah, I got a home bed advantage. Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, game-changing sleep. During Veterans Day sale, save $1,000 on a special edition smart bed, now $1,799. In a smart bed, not like Todd that cheated off his neighbor's paper.
Wow.
Exclusive offers for military members for limited time only at Sleep Number, the Sleep Number store, sleepnumber.com/Patrick. Sleep Number, the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. Phone calls coming up. We'll see if we can bring back those questions that were posed to Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz, because Brett Favre was interviewed, and Favre, I don't know if he was on First Take, but he was questioning the Eagles staying with Carson Wentz instead of Nick Foles. So, of course, Doug Peterson, the head coach, and Carson Wentz had to answer those questions. The second installment of the award-winning drama Save Me comes to Peacock. It's called Save Me 2. Father's search for his missing daughter continues. This season brings more secrets, more suspects, more surprises. Starts streaming Save Me 2 today. All right. Got a lot of cancellations, a couple of postponements here. Not sure where we're headed, but here to help us with our compass is Ross Dellinger. He's Sports Illustrated senior writer covering college football. How did we get to this point, Ross, that we have four games in the SEC that are postponed this weekend? Hey, Ross.
Hey, sorry, guys. My internet connection's a little lost this morning.
Oh, I thought you were giving great thought to my question there.
No, you're going in and out a little bit on me, but I think I caught most of that. How did we get to this point, right? It's been a long few weeks and months, and it's been a roller coaster, right, in college sports in general, and everybody's kind of doing their own thing or were doing their own thing over the summer. And then we kind of all came together lately to play. And now we're experiencing, you know, a second and third wave of the virus. And the SEC specifically is having one of those bad weeks that we expected.
But we're talking about contact tracing. And this isn't about COVID as much a positive test as it is just the contact tracing. Is that correct with the SEC?
That's correct. Yeah. In most cases, it's been about contact tracing at other schools and other conferences as well. It's the biggest hurdle, Dan, in completing a season. And physicians knew over the summer it would be. It's not the positive cases, but it's those high-risk contacts or those deemed to be high-risk contacts, which all conferences are going by the CDC guidelines, which is a person within 6 feet for 15 minutes is a high risk contact. So you can imagine if you have one positive in a football building, you could have 5, 10, 15 high risk contacts. And that's what we're seeing. There's roughly 10 positives on of 7 of the 8 teams involved in a postponement in the SEC, there's roughly a combined 10 positives. Nobody has more than 4, I don't think. But it's the high-risk contacts around them that have been quarantined for 2 weeks. And it's a big hurdle right now in college sports is how to deal with this contact tracing piece. Of course, we know the NFL, you can test out of quarantine after 5 days. Can't do that in college.
I've got Ryan Day, Ohio State's head coach, on next hour. Could you see a scenario where Ohio State doesn't qualify to play for the Big Ten title game, but qualifies to play for the college football playoffs?
I guess so. Yeah, conceivably you could. I think they lost a game, so they can't lose. I think it's 2 more, right? You have to play at least 6. So I guess Ohio State could be 5-0. Won't play in the Big Ten title, but the CFP, because you have that human element, these are people making this, there's no BCS formula, that knowing it's Ohio State, knowing what they've done in the past, seeing them through 5 games, I guess I didn't really think about that, but I guess that's possible.
But also trying to come up with a rationale for the College Football Playoff Committee. If I'm BYU, or I'm A&M, and I'm on the outside looking in, could I schedule a game? Is there a way I can add to my resume so I can be a little bit brighter, shinier to the playoff committee?
Yeah, you could, and we've seen that, right? It's been maybe earlier in the season we've seen that, but we've seen games scheduled a week out or 2 weeks out. While games are being played, games are being scheduled. We haven't seen that, I guess, in the last few weeks, but we did see it earlier in the year. I know there was some talk that, you know, could we get a BYU Liberty game or something like that, like 2 undefeated, group of 5 undefeated teams. Yeah, I mean, BYU could scramble and play a game. I think they have, I looked at their schedule recently, I think they have still 2 off weeks left. So conceivably, they could schedule someone. The problem is would it be someone worthwhile? They're not probably going to get a Power 5 in there, so it'd have to be an undefeated group of 5, like a Liberty or Cincinnati,
for that matter. Did the Big Ten make a mistake earlier, if a game got canceled, that you should be able to go out and schedule? And the reason why I bring this up, Nebraska was trying to do this a couple of weeks ago, and I had a source say that Ohio State and Michigan were on Nebraska's side because they realized they could be put in this situation. And here you have Ohio State's game against Maryland canceled.
I think this season, Dan, is about flexibility. We were on with the SEC commissioner yesterday, and he has a sign he said in his office said, be flexible. This year in 2020, you have to be flexible. And the Big Ten has proven not to be flexible, right? They're trying to play 9 games in 9 weeks. That is obviously offers no flexibility. They would not allow teams to, as you mentioned, like Nebraska, you know, grab another game. No flexibility there. So you're seeing that they're doing the opposite of some other conferences. The Big 12, the ACC, you've seen them be very flexible. The SEC to an extent, not as flexible. They had that one COVID kind of bye week and they're playing a conference only. So they haven't allowed that either. But you've seen a lot of conferences be flexible, and that's kind of the theme of this year. So I do think the Big Ten and even to an extent the SEC should be more flexible, or should have been more flexible, specifically with working in off weeks, more off weeks into their schedules.
Why no talk of an 18 playoff this year, given what we need is flexibility?
Yeah, that was asked to the SEC commissioner yesterday. He brought up a good point. You know, you add more games, they're tougher to complete. We're just trying to get through the games that are currently scheduled. So if you expand the playoff, it makes it more difficult, he said, to complete the playoff. And I think he's got a point. Look, we're on the path, and we've been on the path to expanding the playoff. You know, after the contract runs out, I have no doubt the playoff's going to be expanded. I really do. I mean, we knew, Dan, when they announced the playoff, it was 4 teams, and there are 5 Power 5 conferences. We knew that was going to be an issue. And
yeah,
it has
but Ross, so. Nobody said, hey, let's just make it like the BCS. It's 1 versus 2. I mean, if we want to have the total safety precautions, just have 1 versus 2.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about like this year?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if we're worried about safety protocol, safety first.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, flexibility, right? Yeah, I mean, just tweak it. Of course, it you know, we have to always think about the money, right?
That's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about the money with 18 playoff. That's why I was mentioning that.
Right.
Before I let you go, the Pac-12 is irrelevant. How long does this stay with the Pac-12? Not only this year, but in subsequent seasons? Oh, I think I lost you. Ross, I think I lost
you. I'm sorry, Dan. My internet connection went out again on me.
All right. Well, thank you, Ross. Well, you won't be able to hear me say thank you, Ross, but I'll still say thank you, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated senior writer covering college football. Yes, Paul.
Or was he trying to be nice to the Pac-12? I can't talk. Pac-12, they're going to be
Hear you.
Love you, Dan.
Yes, McLovin.
Feels fitting to go out on the Pac-12 question this season, right?
I can't even get a question in about the Pac-12. A couple of phone calls in here. Then I want to talk about this situation with the Houston Rockets. Ray in Texas. Hi, Ray. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Dippy.
Hey, bud.
Second time caller. Not that it matters. So one quick question. You always have these amazing broadcasting stories, and I love listening to them. So I was wondering if you ever considered writing a book. I think you would be a fantastic writer. You're a fantastic storyteller. Have you ever considered it?
I have, and I've been approached, Ray, but I don't want to do it. But thank you. I was approached by two writers last year and said, you know, are you interested? And I said, no. I don't know. It just feels like you'll leave something out or you're going to upset somebody. And I just, at this stage, I tell the stories. I don't know if there's any new stories that I'm able to tell. And I don't want to get into, you know, salacious stuff or, you know, slinging, you know, criticisms or whatever it might be. And I just don't want to do that. And I could easily do that because I'm very competitive and, you know, I would want it to be great. I want to win, but no, I don't think so. Yes, McLove.
Yeah, would you be worried about hurting people's feelings? I mean,
yes.
Even by leaving them out or something?
Yeah, it just feels like when you write a book, then you open yourself up, and then, you know, the people take aim. And I just, you can say something, whatever you want about when we're on the show, but I don't know. I'm not. I did want to do an interview book. This is years ago. This is probably 7 years ago that I approached a publisher, and I said I'd like to do an interview book where, I'd say Mike Krzyzewski's on, and you print out the interview. He critiques the interview, and then I respond to his critiques of, you know, what he liked or not a fair question or that was interesting or I didn't know. Like, so if I got, let's say, 30 of my favorite interviews, and then I was going to get John Swatsky, who is the person who taught me how to interview. I read about him in a magazine, and he was from Canada. And I said to my boss at SportsCenter, I said, we got to bring this guy in. And John Swatsky came in and gave a 5-day, 8-hour-a-day seminar on interviewing. And I wanted to get John to then critique my interviews and the questions I ask and how I ask them. And I thought that might be a nice tutorial for people to understand that you can ask the right question, you follow up with the right question, or because you ask the right question, you get a great answer, as opposed to I leave you with yes or no as your response. And that was the only thing that really excited me. And then Howard Stern came out with one the last year, and he kind of published his interviews, but I wanted it to be almost a master class in interviewing or understanding the art of interviewing. And I still struggle with this every single day. How to phrase a question, a short question, don't ask, answer, and ask a question. And I thought that might be interesting, that I would give the subject their opportunity to critique my work. And in turn, I could respond to what I was thinking at the time or why I went there, and almost put you in my mind of how I get ready to do an interview, or in the process of the interview, how do you react? you get something where you go, wait, did he just say? I go back to what Pete Rose said when he said that he bet on his team, that he only bet on his team. And I remember at the time thinking, did Pete just say that he only bet on the Reds? And that was his rationale. And he said, I bet them to win. Every night I bet the Reds to win. Now, if you're a gambler, that makes no sense. But Pete said that, and then you realize you've got some gold there. Now, what do you do with that? And you want to open up that treasure chest. It's when you get those moments where you hope you get, you're not sure you got it, but you got to be a great listener. Those were things that I wanted to put in a book. But other than that, my life history or my top 10 list or who I like or don't like, and I had no interest in that. Let me take a break. A couple more phone calls coming up. And the situation with the Houston Rockets looks pretty grim. I don't know who wants to stay in Houston right now to play for the Rockets. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. As a report in the New York Daily News, Stephen Bondi saying that Tampa emerging as the front runner for the Raptors, if they can't stay in Toronto for this upcoming season, it would be Newark, Nashville, or Tampa. And then he goes on to say Florida taxes always beat New Jersey taxes. Oh, the Raptors, like the Blue Jays, might have to relocate somewhere in the United States. Be good for Tampa. I had heard Nashville from the beginning, but Newark or Tampa, I guess, on the possibility list there. Jesse in Los Angeles. Hey, Jess, what's on your mind?
Hey, DP.
Hey, bud.
Hey, thanks for taking my call today. That was an amazing interview with Emmanuel Acho. Very insightful and just what a rising talent that guy is.
Yeah, so, he's only 30 years of age. Very sharp.
Yeah, I'm 30. I'm 33, and I'm like, well, what am I doing with my life? But that guy's great. Hey, in reference to his book title, Awkward Conversation with a Black Man, you know, it's no secret that my favorite sound clip is the celebrity journalist Flo Anthony clip, but a close second is of today's infamous birthday girl, which is Tonya Harding, who turns 50 today. And as I recall, you had a pretty awkward conversation with her and her bodyguard, Paul. So any reason to bring that up, I'll take it. I'm with that, Jess.
Thank you, Jesse. Yeah, I think that was 2003, 2004, but I don't know if I remember it that well. But she was doing some promotion that she was going to be at a hockey game, and she was going to do, I think, in between periods, like there was a boxing match or something, and we had her on, and I'd never interviewed her before. And we started going down a road, and she put her, I guess, agent or producer on, and it was... Hold
You're
on.
Really going to go there, Dan?
Yeah. And I said, yeah. And they said, hold on. Paul wants to talk to you. And I go,
I'm not going
to
make a skeptical out hold of my on, boxing
Paul
career.
Wants to talk to you.
I'm not going to make a skeptical. Yeah. Hey, yeah. And then Paul came on.
Hold on a second. Paul wants to talk to you.
It's Paul Bravo.
Yeah, Paul.
What's happening?
We're doing a radio interview.
Yeah, Paul. It's called a radio interview.
Don't keep it a positive. Keep it positive, man.
Oh, that was a good one.
Let's say he goes like, Paul Brown here.
Yeah, like I don't give a damn who you are.
If you... Oh, what? Paul Brown?
Oh, no, Paul Brown. Oh, I've been waiting. You know, I want to talk to you, Paul, more than I do Tonya Harding.
A couple of things here that stood out to that. Paul goes, what are we doing here? And you said, I'm doing an interview on a national radio show, Paul.
Yeah.
We're doing a radio interview.
We're going to bold Harding. Stuff, man. Yeah. We're going to bold stuff.
And then about 45 seconds before that, you brought up religion... And that's where Tonya, and why, if you repented, why wouldn't you not want to talk about this? And why would someone do something like this? And she goes, you really want to go there? And you go, well, I kind of would.
I said, yes, I do. Like, you're telling me about your religion and you're born again. And all right, well, you kind of have to confess to your sins and repent. And let's talk about what happened with Nancy Kerrigan. You really want to go there? Yes. That's why I'm asking the question.
Haven't had her back.
Nah.
Haven't had her
back. I think we're good. I think I'd rather have Margot Robbie on, who played Tonya Harding.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic
question. Yes, thank you, Tom.
That might not be a fair poll question.
Yeah, no. I saw where the Rockets, it's abandoned ship here. So Daryl Morey put this together. He's gone. He's now in Philadelphia. Russell Westbrook Jr., the third one's out. I got Eric Gordon, who's upset. P.J. Tucker, who's upset. Does James Harden want out? Yeah, McLovin.
Send him to Philly. I mean, Harden, the more you hear about the Rockets being dissatisfied, it just makes more sense.
Okay, how are they dissatisfied? Because Russ wanted out of Oklahoma City to play with James Harden. Harden wanted Russell Westbrook there. I got Eric Gordon, who nobody cares about. Like, he wants to, hey, I want more touches. Who's the knucklehead that got sent home house?
Yeah.
Remember, he was getting to know one of the cleaning women?
Yep.
And then he's upset with his role with the Rockets.
House arrest.
He's lucky to have a role with the Rockets. Like, who do they think they are? You're the Rockets. Get a clue.
So if you're the Rockets, get rid of these guys. You got to start over, right? I mean, this core is not going to – I don't know if you can.
I don't know what you're getting for Russell Westbrook. And where are you sending him? What are you getting in return? But Harden is what – this is what Harden wanted. Russell Westbrook wanted this. So I don't, you know, P.J. Tucker's a nice player. Nobody cares about P.J. Tucker. Eric Gordon. They're complaining about their usage. You're on a team with two of the biggest ball hogs in NBA history. Like, are you surprised about your touches? Yeah, Paul.
I could see LeBron and Frank Vogel, the Lakers, just sitting there watching all this disarray. Hopefully it bleeds over to the Clippers. More disarray.
I don't know if the Clippers want Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's a nice player, but he's just a nice player now. I could see him going to the Bulls, playing for Billy Donovan. But I'm sure the Knicks are going to get in and think, wow, we got Russell Westbrook, we're relevant. You're not. Now, you got a player that we might know when we tune in, but that doesn't make you relevant. Detroit's a name that came up. Memphis is a name that came up for us. I don't know about Harden, if Harden wants to be there. Who wants Harden? They're a fascinating regular season team. They are one of my favorite regular season teams to watch. In the postseason, they're not a good team. Yeah, McLovin.
Could say Harden did go to Philly, or is there a fit where he could win a title, other than the Lakers or the Warriors? I mean, is there a team that he can be that piece? Or does he have to hog the ball so much that he might
not work? I don't know if he can change. I don't know if he'll change. Can you imagine him in 3 years from now where he's like the third option? I could never imagine that for James Harden. Yeah, remember Carmelo? Carmelo was basically a ball hog. Like, if it went to him, it stayed with him. And then he realized, hey, if I'm going to salvage a second career here, I got to be a role player. I got to be the third option there. And because of that, he revitalized his career. But feels like everybody wants out of Houston. That's fun while it lasted. Head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Ryan Day, will join us. More phone calls coming up as well. The Masters is, it's nice and bright and shiny there. Final hour coming up.